Elizabeth Short, 22-year-old female from Medford, Massachusetts. Beautiful girl, came out to Hollywood, California to fall in love and live happily ever after.
It's LA on VJ Day. Revelers pour down Hollywood Boulevard. Girls lean out of cars. Soldiers and sailors run up and grab kisses. There's a pretty dark-haired girl caught in close-up. It's Betty Short. She's young. She's vibrant. She lives. The crime scene looked like this. Weed-covered lots north to south. The body on the west side, mid-block.
It was a horrific sight. The body was surgically cut in half, bisected.
There are people out there who are only aroused when they're killing. She met someone like that.
This was a huge story in 1947. It was headlines for 30 days straight. They had 1,000 law enforcement officers working on the case. This is Los Angeles' most notorious unsolved murder.
My name is Steve Hodell. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, California.
Steve Hodell, he grows up to join LAPD.
Spent 24 years with the police.
Moreover, he becomes a homicide detective.
I've had 300 murder investigations in my career, nothing on a level of this kind of horror.
He starts investigating his father's life.
Dad was a man of mystery. Obviously, this is somebody Dad knew intimately.
There's what we know.
This is my home. This was the palace. My father was the king.
There's what we sense.
My mother said, you don't understand. Your father has got a lust for blood. You don't know anything about your father.
And there's how we revise our own memory.
I'd have never dreamt that Dad could be an actual suspect of this crime.
This is Steve Hodell's journey through his most forbidding memories.
For me, this is a search for the truth. Searching for the truth of my father and searching for the truth of who killed Elizabeth Short.
Black Dahlia Confidential.
She's Elizabeth Short. A roamer, a sweet kid. She's a ghost and a blank page to record our fears and desires.
To crime writer James Ellroy, the brief life and horrific death of Elizabeth Short is a classic American tragedy known as the Black Dahlia case.
A post-war Mona Lisa, an LA quintessential.
A story about love and loneliness, murder and madness, played out in the city of dreams, Los Angeles.
A body in a vacant lot and an apparition called the Black Dahlia.
It's the most famous unsolved murder in Los Angeles history. A beautiful young victim, a cunning psychopathic killer, a real-life mystery that's inspired countless movie makers and writers, from Double Indemnity to Chinatown to LA Confidential. Even the nickname, the Black Dahlia, is straight out of the movies. The Blue Dahlia was a nightclub in a 1946 crime film. Newspapers adapted that title to fit the Elizabeth Short case. And the Black Dahlia legend was born.
And action!
The mystery behind the legend continues to inspire great storytellers. Director Brian De Palma.
Scott.
And a cast that includes Hilary Swank.
What do I have to do to keep my name out of the papers?
Scarlett Johansson.
I'm scared.
And Josh Hartnett. Once again brings the twisted tale of the Black Dahlia to the big screen.
Great test, Elizabeth Short.
Say you care, say
it. Short!
This is a very sad scene.
Beautiful Hollywood wannabe.
That's the camera that's covering you, yes.
Director Brian De Palma.
And of course, the question's always when something like that, how does that beautiful girl, which you've seen pin-up shots of, become this? And who did that to her and why? And it's one of these mysteries that will go on forever.
Nothing stays buried forever. Nothing.
It's the great LA murder. And LA's had some doozies.
Well, it's up here a ways more.
Steve Hodell was just 5 years old when Elizabeth Short was murdered.
The crime scene. We're just coming up here now.
As a cop, he worked the same Hollywood streets Elizabeth once knew.
You know, I had lots of murders where you had young runaways, and within weeks they'd have a needle in their arm and they'd be doing tricks on Hollywood Boulevard.
For over 17 years, he investigated 300 murders. The Black Dahlia case was just another cold case, but after he retired, it would come to haunt him.
We're standing just at the location where the body would have been placed. Now, this would have been a large vacant lot. The upper torso was juxtaposed just off to the left, about 12 inches.
Do you have any idea why the body would be left here?
Because the killer was sure that it would be found fairly quickly, as it was. Clearly, he wasn't trying to hide it. He wanted the notoriety.
The killer got what he wanted. For weeks, a terrified city watched as the search for the murderer unfolded. There were dozens of false confessions, hundreds of other suspects questioned and cleared. The killer even wrote letters taunting the police and also sent Elizabeth Short's personal address book to a local newspaper. But after the biggest manhunt in LA history, the murder was listed officially unsolved. It stayed that way for 58 years.
That's Elizabeth when she was between 10 and 11.
Mary Passios has never forgotten Elizabeth. Elizabeth was her babysitter and idol in their working-class neighborhood of Medford, Massachusetts, outside Boston.
She was Black Irish. She had the dark hair, the translucent blue-green eyes, and a flawless complexion. She had beautiful skin.
A vibrant young woman growing up in a dark, drab time, the height of the Depression.
Did she ever talk about her dreams to you?
Just that she was going to Hollywood.
And this is Hollywood Boulevard, the business and theater center of the film capital.
Post-war Los Angeles was a boomtown, overrun with ex-servicemen, star-struck wannabes.
Here's a gorgeous number in blue knitted wool.
And hustlers. Then, as now, a place where pretty faces were a dime a dozen, and life could be tough.
Most of the girls are applauded, thanked, and then quickly forgotten till the next contest comes along.
She was broke. And she was borrowing money.
Elizabeth became a Hollywood hanger-on, going out on the town each night, usually with a different guy, to places like the Frolic Room, which looks pretty much the same now as it did back then.
Friends said they would get her a date so that she'd eat. It was pretty common for women to do that.
Dating for dinner.
Dating for dinner.
Her last night on Earth was January 14th, 1947.
Merry Christmas!
It's a Wonderful Life was playing at Hollywood's Pantages Theater. Around dawn the next day, a mysterious black car was seen at the spot where Elizabeth's body was later found. A black car, very similar to the 1936 Packard owned by Steve Hodell's father, Dr. George Hodell.
Here's a photograph of me sitting on Father's lap.
And that's you here?
Yeah.
And that's your father?
Right.
George Hodell was a brilliant man with an IQ of 186, a point higher, he would say, than Einstein's. He began as a child musical prodigy, studying in Paris with Madame Montessori. After a stint as a newspaper reporter at the age of 16, he sailed through medical school, studying surgery. He settled in Los Angeles, running the county's venereal disease clinic, where it was rumored he treated some of LA's top brass. A man with family money, who lived in an exotic house in the middle of Los Angeles that was as eccentric as its owner.
I would describe it as looking like a Mayan temple. It really did. It was a fortress from the world.
Tamar Hodell was one of 11 children the doctor had by five different women. She and her half-brother Steve remember their father's house as a place where artists and movie people came for flamboyant parties, presided over by the dynamic George Hodel.
Anyone that's ever met this man will tell you the kind of charm and power that he had.
George Hodel's charm was certainly not lost on his son Steve. The two remained close until 1999, when the doctor died in his high-rise apartment in San Francisco at the age of 91.
I flew to San Francisco. I'm sitting there with June, my stepmother, who had been with my father for 30 years. And June said, I think your father would want you to have this. And she handed me this small album. I looked at it and I said to June, who is this? And June said, I don't know, somebody your father knew from a long time ago. I was trying to pull it in. Where do I know this picture? Why do I know this woman? Somewhere deep within me, I made the connection. The Black Dahlia. The Black Dahlia. I knew that it was a famous unsolved case from long ago, but I didn't know any of the details. I didn't even know her name.
To this day, Steve Hodel isn't sure what it was that made him compare pictures of the Black Dahlia to snapshots his father had saved of a mystery woman.
Maybe it was because the Black Dahlia always wore the flower in her hair and looked like that. Maybe that was the connection.
The search for answers became an obsession. Steve spent months combing through newspaper accounts, talking to old-timers, and traveling back to his childhood.
This is our backyard.
Steve revisited the exotic house on Franklin Avenue in Hollywood.
The three of us were standing right about here,
where he and his brothers lived off and on with their father in the late 1940s.
When we were living here, there was nothing but a large white polar bear rug in here.
He suspects one of the pictures from his father's album was taken here.
There's a Chinese statuary that you can see in the picture, and it looks very much like the statuary that Dad had here at the house.
It was literally a house of secrets.
Off in this direction, we have what was Dad's study.
Complete with a secret room where the children were never allowed to go.
Lo and behold,
what did your father use this room for?
We just assumed storage.
When the truth was far different and far more terrible.
It was in this fortress of a house, Steve says, that his father could do what he wanted, no matter how immoral or illegal.
I have seen my father's cruelty. When I was 11, he wanted to teach me oral sex.
When you were 11?
11.
Your own father?
My own father.
Assured that sex between father and daughter was normal, Tamar had anything but a normal childhood. She remembers the doctor's friends, among them famous photographer Man Ray.
He was a dirty old man. He took pictures of everybody.
Man Ray became the family photographer, a perverse family photographer.
He took pictures of me, and they were nudes.
But how old were you when he was taking these pictures of you?
Maybe 12.
A frequent house guest was John Huston, the famous movie director.
I had an experience with him. He came in after me and he lunged and put me down on the floor and was definitely going to rape me. And my stepmother came in and she pulled him off saying, John, stop it.
And there were always women. Tamar remembers a constant stream of young, beautiful women.
There were always a line of beautiful women waiting to see my father or to go into his quarters, into the golden bedroom.
I met
Tamar when I was 14 and she was 23.
Michelle Phillips, former singer with the Mamas and the Papas, has been Tamar's friend since 1958.
This is how she'd grown up, in this crazy environment with her father, and she had obviously been used as a sexual object with him and his friends. It was all amazing to me.
It wasn't until some years later, after one of her concerts, that Michelle Phillips met George Odell for herself.
I felt a chill. And a lot of it was because I knew that he knew that she had told me. And I recently started thinking about the way he looked at me. I think he wanted to kill me.
Tamar Odell must have felt a similar chill when, as a teenager in 1949, she ran away from her father's home. She told police what had been going on there.
Within the next day, there's a knock on the door at the Franklin House, LAPD juvenile detectives. Dr. George Odell, you're under arrest for incest.
The well-known doctor was put on trial, charged with offering his 14-year-old daughter to several of his friends at an orgy.
My father had intercourse with me. It wasn't loving. He acted guilt-ridden. That's how he acted. Ashamed. It was very bad.
But in the courtroom, a parade of family members testified that Tamar made up the story.
No one wanted George Odell to go to jail, because George Odell was the one who was making all the money, first of all, and he was supporting all the people surrounding this tale.
They parade all of these witnesses. The jury comes back in a kind of an OJ decision real quick in 45 minutes. Said not guilty.
What was your reaction when the verdict was acquittal?
I didn't know what to think. I didn't do anything, but I became the criminal after my father was acquitted.
But George Odell's troubles with the law were far from over. During the incest investigation, police got a tip that Odell had known Elizabeth Shore before her murder. Tamar believes her father knew he had become a suspect.
He said we were being investigated or watched.
When all of this was going on, Steve was just a kid. But as an adult, it began to make sense. It's when he began sorting out the details of his father's past and the Black Dahlia case that he found the two stories merging.
I see strong similarities in the mouth and the nose, the hair.
Steve Odell was convinced the photos in his father's album were indeed of the Black Dahlia.
It wasn't all that surprising that my father knew Elizabeth Short. She was hanging out in Hollywood at the same time, going to parties. Dad was famous for throwing these parties.
But what did catch Steve Odell by surprise was one of the many taunting cards and letters the killer sent to newspapers. It was this one, written by hand, turning in Wednesday, January 29th. Had my fun with police. Black Dahlia Avenger.
That's my father's handwriting. I know my father's handwriting. There was no question about it. So at that point, I thought, oh my God, this is the real deal.
Steve Odell took his suspicions to an old friend, Deputy District Attorney Stephen Kay.
Steve Kay speaking.
When Steve called me and told me what he had concluded, you could have knocked me off my chair. It was just, wow.
Kay tracked down the Black Dahlia file in the DA's office, a box of investigative notes and transcripts that no one had touched for over half a century.
I sit down and I open the box and I start going through it, and out falls a picture of George Odell. This is the smoking guns. This is the proof that I've been looking for.
The first thing they said to me was, Dr. Hodel's daughter. Oh, yes, we know all about Dr. Hodel.
When investigators for the Los Angeles DA's office began questioning Tamar Hodel about her father, it was clear there was more than the 1949 orgy on their minds.
They also suspected that he had committed the murder of the Black Dahlia.
They told you that?
They told me that.
But she never told her younger half-brother, Steve. So years later, when going through the DA's file on the Black Dahlia case, Steve Hodel got the shock of his life. In 1949, 2 years after Elizabeth Short was murdered, the district attorney had begun to zero in on a suspect.
You could just tell by the wealth of material that Dr. Hodel was their prime suspect.
Deputy District Attorney Stephen Kay says that in the file is information from a female witness who told authorities that George Hodel definitely knew Elizabeth Short.
Do you remember the Black Dahlia case?
Yes, I do. Yes, I remember it.
And then there's Walter Morgan. He's 90 years old now, but back in the day, he was a young investigator working for the L.A. District Attorney who took over the Black Dahlia investigation in 1949.
We tailed Dr. George Hodel, but I never did get to see his face. I only saw the back of him.
But that's not all he did. In fact, he did something then he couldn't do today, at least not legally. Morgan, along with police detectives, came here to the Franklin House, using a plastic identification card to open the door. The cops slipped into the house and surreptitiously planted eavesdropping devices in here. For the next 40 days, 24 hours a day, detectives listened to hundreds of Dr. Hodel's private conversations.
This was actually live microphones hidden in the house.
So how unusual was that?
That was very unusual.
While the recordings no longer exist, the transcripts are in the DA's file.
Sometimes you'd have a DA investigator in the basement of the Hollywood Division Police Station, and sometimes it would be LAPD.
At one point, George Hodel is heard saying,
"Supposing I did kill the Black Dahlia, they couldn't prove it now. They can't talk to my secretary anymore because she's dead." I just can't believe that an innocent man would say that.
The secretary was Ruth Spalding. Her death certificate blames a drug overdose. Despite the statements captured on wire recordings, in the spring of 1950, the DA abruptly stopped investigating George Hodel. Even more surprising, the chief investigator of the case, Frank Jemison, summed up the evidence saying it tends to eliminate this suspect. Yeah.
Do you believe that at least the lieutenant in charge, Jemison, really thought that George Hodel should have been eliminated as a suspect?
No, I don't believe that. How can you say that those tapes clear Dr. Hodel? If anything, I think they sound like a guilty man who is ready to take it on the lam.
So why did the DA stop looking at George Hodel? Perhaps the answer is also in those secret recordings. At one point, George Hodel is heard saying,
"This is the best payoff I've seen between law enforcement agencies. I'd like to get a connection made in the DA's office."
What do you think he's referring to there? Paying off?
Yeah.
Someone in the DA's office?
That's what he would like to do, yeah. And obviously, I can take from this that he's done it before.
The only thing I can think is some money must have transpired between people.
But it sounds like you think there may have been a cover-up of some sort.
Well, everybody thought that.
In fact, 48 Hours has learned that in 1950, both the DA and the LAPD stopped pursuing the Black Dahlia case, even though several investigators later told their relatives that they knew who the killer was.
This is the city, Los Angeles, California.
And actor Jack Webb,
my name's Friday,
who played a cop on television and had close friends on the force, told an acquaintance that the chief of detectives had specifically described the Black Dahlia killer as
a doctor in Hollywood who lived on Franklin Avenue.
The very street where George Hodel lived. And it's important to remember that back in 1949, the LAPD was a dirty department, rocked by scandals involving cops and gangsters, prostitutes and payoffs. A time and a place crime writer James Ellroy knows well.
Reports recommending whether or not to file charges to the district attorney were on sale for $500 a pop. The detective bureau was a repository of drunks and cronies of high-ranking LAPD officers. At the time of Elizabeth Short's death, it was a very corrupt institution.
Did the LAPD allow a killer to go free?
I'm sure that the powers that be said, you got to get out of Dodge.
Can modern technology help with the mystery of the Black Dahlia?
The hairline is the same. I think the nose is the same.
Los Angeles, seen from one of its many hills.
This is Cherokee Avenue in the heart of Hollywood. We're just a block north of Hollywood Boulevard. And Elizabeth, during 46, lived in this apartment building here, which is the Chancellor Apartments.
Before she was known only as the Black Dahlia, Elizabeth Short was just another struggling young woman.
And she actually lived at the top floor. She shared an apartment there with six other girls. So there were seven girls, each paying $1 for rent.
Hollywood's motion picture industry beckoning thousands with stars in their eyes.
She was, says Steve Hodel, like so many dreamers before her who had come to post-war Los Angeles.
A willingness to do almost anything to crash the movies.
How did she support herself?
Well, basically, she lived off her friends. Didn't have a job. She'd go out on dates with men, but she wasn't a prostitute, and she didn't drink.
But that clean-cut image of Elizabeth Short did not sell newspapers. Crime novelist James Ellroy.
How was Elizabeth Short portrayed in these years since she was killed?
Portrayed as a prostitute. It isn't true. Portrayed as a movie mad girl who got parts in a lot of movies of the time, including Casablanca. It certainly isn't true.
I believe she's been victimized twice, brutally murdered. And then the person who was murdered was so badly smeared. That would be how I'd first remember her smiling. She smiled a great deal.
Mary Passios was a neighbor of Short's back in her hometown of Medford, Massachusetts.
I want people to know she was a very nice person. She was not just beautiful outside, she was beautiful inside.
Her beauty certainly entranced men. After Short was murdered, a lot of the men she knew became suspects. Among them, Mark Hansen, a nightclub owner reportedly obsessed with Elizabeth Short. And Glenn Wolfe, one of Short's landlords, described to police as a sexual maniac. But they can be eliminated, says Hodel, for one simple reason. The condition of Elizabeth Short's body.
I started looking at the crime itself, and what I discovered, to my surprise, was that the killer was a surgeon. Not a meat cutter, not a butcher, a skilled professional surgeon.
48 Hours decided to put the theories of Steve Hodel, the former homicide detective, to the test.
The person who committed this horrible crime cut across the bone in order to separate one half of her body from the other half of her body.
We asked Dr. Mark Wallach, chief of surgery at St. Vincent's Hospital in New York, to look at the crime scene photos as well as the autopsy.
You don't get this kind of training where you can actually invade a human body unless you've had some surgical experience, in my opinion.
So you're saying you think it must have been a doctor?
In my opinion, yes.
While Steve Hodell's father didn't actually practice surgery, he excelled at it in medical school.
He was a surgeon. She was killed by a surgeon. That really is a limiting pool of suspects.
There are other pieces of the puzzle that convince Steve Hodell his father was the killer. Take the handwritten notes the killer sent newspapers right after Elizabeth Short's murder.
I'm not saying it's similar. I'm saying this is my father's handwriting.
Let's take a look at the uppercase forms of the letter N. Now,
we then asked John Osborne, one of the most respected document examiners in the field, to compare letters the killer sent to the newspapers with examples of handwriting from Dr. George Hodell.
In this example, you'll note that the N's are written almost in a technical printing style. However, if you take a look at the N's that appear in the questioned writing, you'll note that it's a narrow form of the letter. There is simply not enough evidence to prove one way or the other whether his father was the writer or not the writer.
Then I came to these two pictures.
And what about the photographs of the mystery woman found in the album? The ones that started Steve Hodell on his investigation in the first place.
The diamond-shaped face, the high forehead, the thick hair.
Is this, in fact, Elizabeth Short?
Initially, I did think that they were very, very close.
Suni Chapman is a forensic artist who uses and distributes eFit, facial identification software that helps create detailed sketches of suspects for police investigations.
eFit was actually developed for Scotland Yard.
Chapman was able to compare one of the photos of the mystery woman to a picture of Elizabeth Short and initially saw a lot of similarities.
The hairline is the same. I think the nose tip is the same. I think the nostrils have a strong likeness.
But upon closer examination,
where I don't think there's a strong similarity is in the bridge of the nose.
And then there's the chin.
Elizabeth Short's photograph, although she has quite a long chin, the photograph of the other woman has a very, very strong sort of half moon shape and a much shorter chin.
After measuring the facial features in both photos, Chapman says,
I'm 85% sure that these two photographs are not of the same woman.
But none of these expert opinions changes Steve's.
Even if those are not Elizabeth Short.
You mean you actually entertain the possibility that those two pictures that started you on this investigation might not be Elizabeth Short?
A lot of people look at them and say, I don't see it.
But you still then, even if you started for the wrong reason, you ended with the right result.
Exactly.
That's because Steve Hodell says he's uncovered yet another clue that points to his father as the killer. This photo done by Dr. Hodell's close friend, the artist Man Ray.
He wanted to be like Man Ray. He wanted to be an artist. And I think this was his masterpiece. The body was positioned north to south. So this is north. It was carefully placed. You're not going to get this positioning. The hands were positioned over the head as if almost to form horns.
Steve believes his father posed Elizabeth Short's body to mimic this classic art photo titled The Minotaur, the mythical beast that devoured young maidens. Her arms were positioned like the horns.
The way her arms were up like this at the same angle above her head. Now, I've tried lots of murder cases, and I've only had one other case where the victim has been posed.
Deputy District Attorney Stephen Kay not only agrees with Steve Hodell's theory, he thinks the cuts found across the victim's mouth and face were meant to mimic another Man Ray work, The Lovers.
I know that that is a bizarre thing, but this was a bizarre man.
After Steve Hodell published a book, the LAPD was willing to hear his theories, but not to open the original police files on the case. Until now.
Unknown Elizabeth Short compared to my father's picture. Again, we all see through different lenses.
Steve Hodell's theory continues to fascinate and intrigue readers, despite the questions raised by 48 Hours.
There is simply not enough evidence to prove one way or the other whether his father was the writer or not the writer.
I'm 85% sure that these two photographs are not of the same woman.
Hodel still has powerful allies. Assistant District Attorney Stephen Kay believes Hodel's father was the killer.
He was a despicable human being. I mean, the way he treated women, it was like a piece of Kleenex that he would blow his nose and throw it away in the trash.
In the DA's office, then.
Crime novelist James Ellroy is also convinced.
I think Steve Hodel is a good and noble guy. I think he solved the Black Dahlia murder case.
But there are also plenty of skeptics.
Do you believe that Steve Hodel has solved the murder of Elizabeth Short?
No.
You don't?
No.
Mary Passios believes that Hodel relies too much on speculation in the case against his father.
He could probably go in a list of about half a dozen good suspects.
And the Los Angeles Police Department agrees. A year and a half after the district attorney opened his files, the LAPD finally revealed in an off-camera briefing the secrets of its own Black Dahlia investigation.
No surprise, Dr. George Hodel was at one point a major suspect, but police say he was only one of 22 major suspects, seven of whom were doctors. Police also contradicted Steve Hodel and claimed there was no proof that his father even knew Elizabeth Short. But the Los Angeles Police Department has its own credibility problems.
The LAPD now admits that in the years since Elizabeth Short's murder, virtually all the physical evidence in this case has disappeared. The police aren't sure how, but it has simply vanished from the files. The bottom line, LA's most famous unsolved murder may never be solved.
How can you lose all of the physical evidence in the most important crime that LAPD's ever had? And it's not just the physical evidence, it's the interviews, it's the wire recordings, my father, everything has disappeared.
Shocked and angered by the LAPD's response, Steve Hodel also dismisses the findings of two handwriting experts, our own and the LAPD's, who both said they were not convinced that the handwriting in the killer's letters matched Dr. George Hodel's.
It is my father's handwriting. I don't have to be convinced. I don't need an expert to tell me. I know it as a fact.
Most people would be happy to hear that the LAPD doubts that his father is a killer. Why aren't you? Why are you so determined to prove that he was, in fact, the Black Dahlia killer?
Because it's the truth.
Whatever the truth about Dr. George Hodel, he is still causing pain for the people closest to him. There is Steve, the son struggling with conflicting emotions for the man he believes is both a monster and his father.
This hasn't been an easy thing. People saying, oh, this is just a son who hates his father and stuff. You know, this is a daddy dearest thing.
Was there any sense of revenge against your father by publishing this?
None at all. No. I mean, I love my father. I love him to this day.
I loved him too, even though I was very hurt by him and kept waiting for him to be a good guy.
And there is Tamar, Steve's half-sister, who never got over the trauma of being molested at age 14 by her father. Tamar's old friend, Michelle Phillips.
The relationship was just so monstrous and sad for her.
And if Steve Hodel is correct, the ultimate victim of his father was Elizabeth Short.
She was missed. That's what I'd like people to understand. She was gorgeous. Inside and out.
You miss her even 57 years afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, I never know when it will creep up.
Great test, Elizabeth Short.
And told that I'm very photogenic.
And again, almost six decades after her brutal killing, The Black Dahlia, the feature film, is set to play upon a mystery.
What happened?
And the imaginations of millions of Americans.
And action!
And now real movie stars like Scarlett Johansson.
You sick? How you
no!
Hey, Mark?
Hilary Swank.
You know, not being able to solve a murder of that caliber,
I think was a pretty big deal. And I think that was the infatuation that people have.
Okay, stand by, please. We'll shoot this one.
And Josh Hartnett.
Anybody who was around California area at that time knew, you know, the whole saga. It was in the newspapers every day. It was a big deal. I guess you kind of liken it to maybe the, you know, JonBenet Ramsey case.
And action!
They will become part of a news story that's already a Hollywood legend.
She was young and beautiful, determined to be famous, but destined to be infamous.
We may never know for sure who killed Elizabeth Short or whether George Hodel was the Black Dahlia killer. He fled the United States just days after the district attorney stopped investigating him in 1950, not to return until 40 years later, when the search for the killer had long gone cold.
This case, this investigation, has been described as a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma, and I can't think of a more perfect description than that.
A mystery, but to crime writer James Ellroy, one with a perfect ending.
It's divine providence that the mad doctor spawns a son who becomes an LAPD homicide detective who sees photographs that are not even of Elizabeth Short, and it turns out that his old man did the job anyway. I dig it.